Today, con job, housing dog whistles and sugar hits as election day looms. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. You can tell the election is close, as both major parties have launched their campaigns formally with Dutton in Western Sydney and Alwyn in Perth. Recognising that costs of living and housing specifically are haunting younger voters, who now comprise the bulk of voters for the first time, by the way, housing was at the heart of both campaigns. And both parties launched proposals aimed at tackling the housing market, which of course has become more unaffordable for many as a result of a generation of bad policy. But I give them both a major fail, as both sides presented just a fig leaf that their policies will increase the supply of homes. In an economy with labour shortages and other supply constraints, governments can't build extra homes faster or cheaper than the private sector, and labour is already falling behind its existing commitment of 1.2 million homes over 5 years. The supply side won't be fixed for a generation on current settings, despite what they claim. Peter Dutton supercharged his fight against Labour over housing policy with a promise that first-time buyers of newly built homes will be able to deduct the interest paid on their mortgage from income taxes under a coalition government. Today, I bring a message of hope to all Australians seeking to own a home of their own, Dutton told the audience of party faithfuls. I will be a Prime Minister who restores the dream of home ownership. It was a populist election pitch as he upended the tax system by pledging first home buyers will be able to tax deduct the interest they pay on the first $650,000 of a mortgage for a newly built home for 5 years. The measure will be available to individuals earning up to $135,000 and joint applicants with combined incomes of up to $250,000 whilst allowing their incomes to rise thereafter. The latest policy has eerie parallels to former Liberal Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser's pledging tax rebates for home mortgage interest payments, which at the time defied Treasury advice. It's yet another demand-side coalition policy on top of allowing first buyers to dip into $50,000 of their superannuation to purchase a home. The coalition's plan can only work if bank credit assessors calculate that people's after-tax income will be higher by up to about $13,500 a year for a family as a result of the tax deductibility of interest. The Big Four declined to comment on Sunday, but of course, if you're on a lower income and pay no tax, this won't help at all. Further up the income scale, accounting for interest deductibility would boost borrowing capacity for buyers of off-the-plan homes, which are more exposed to builders going bust. But the record wave of builder bankruptcies following the end of the Morrison government's home builder stimulus in the pandemic era shows the risk of government subsidies artificially propping up demand for new homes. Prices will rise even faster, and it's expected to cost the federal budget $1.2 billion over the Ford estimates. Because access to the scheme is dependent on the property being a new build, the coalition argues it will boost constructivity and housing supply. And it also plans to boost spending on infrastructure like roads and other facilities, something missing in many outer suburban areas currently. Coalition Housing spokesperson Michael Sucker said the coalition would offer a massive structural change to our tax system to provide a huge tax concession to encourage first home buyers to give them the firepower in the first place. Now, I would add that in most countries where mortgage interest payments are tax deductible, like, for example, the US, governments tend to claim a substantial proportion of the capital gain of people's homes when they sell, but not so in the current coalition plans. Turning to Labour, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese unveiled a plan to allow all Australians looking to climb onto the property ladder to buy their first home with a 5% deposit, and avoiding lenders' mortgage insurance, or LMI. The proposed expansion of existing income cap program would instead be made universally available for a wider range of homes by a re-elected Albanese government. Under the housing package, unveiled at Labour's campaign in Perth today, the federal government will also put $10 billion towards building up to 100,000 homes exclusively for first-time buyers. Our 5% deposit plan will be open to every Australian looking to buy their first home, Albanese told the audience of party faithfuls. It will be available for homes valued all the way up to the average price in every city and region, and you won't have to pay a single dollar in mortgage insurance. Under Labor, all first home buyers will be able to enter the property market with just a 5% deposit from next year without lenders' mortgage insurance. The federal government will guarantee another 15% of the purchase price, effectively wiping out the private sector business models of lenders' mortgage insurance for first home buyers. The existing guarantee scheme will be expanded from 1 in 3 first home buyers, or about 35,000 people a year, to an unlimited number by abolishing the $125,000 income limit for eligibility. The guarantee will become available for purchases worth up to $1.5 million in Sydney, $950,000 in Melbourne, $1 million in Brisbane and Canberra, $850,000 in Perth, $900,000 in Adelaide, and $700,000 in Hobart. And Albanese also announced that a re-elected Labor government would introduce the $1,000 instant tax deduction for years 26 to 27. This will guarantee that everyone can opt for an automatic tax deduction of $1,000 on their work expenses, he said. No paperwork, no box of receipts, no scrolling through online banking, just tick the box on your return. It'll be ready to go every year. Well, sounds like a bit of a bribe to me. Back on housing, earlier on Sunday morning, Housing Minister Claire O'Neill told insiders that Labor's housing plan would mean those first home buyers won't be competing with property investors or people of other generations. The housing that is being built today is not affordable for most young people who are entering the market. And that's the real problem, she told the program. What we're doing is supplementing supply at the affordable end of the market, and that's where it's really needed. The homes will be built over 8 years, she said. But day one, if our governments are re-elected, we will sit down with the states and map out where those projects will be built. To be eligible for one of the properties, buyers would need to be Australian citizens who have never bought before and who plan to live in the house. Access to the scheme would also, in all likelihood, be income tested, O'Neill said. Some 50,000 Australians a year already access the income-capped version of the scheme, but the government expects that number to grow to nearly 80,000 after the expansion. This is a scheme that is already in operation, and it's proved to work, O'Neill said. The minister said that Treasury modelling of the new expanded scheme did not suggest that it would have a significant impact on house prices. But of course, remember, this was during a period of rising interest rates, so that was by far the bigger break on prices. We're talking about a pretty narrow band of new first home buyers in the market, she said. We want more first home buyers in the market. If we're not willing to accept that, then we are basically saying we won't do anything to help young people, and our government won't tolerate that. The commitment builds on the Albanese government's existing $33 billion investment in housing, taking the total package to $43 billion, which Labor claims is the largest housing investment in Australia's modern history. Labor has also pledged a further $10 billion investment to work with the states to build up to 100,000 homes exclusively available for first home buyers in 26-27, with owners able to move in from the following financial year. The rollout will be a joint effort in partnership with states, developers and community housing providers. O'Neill described the reforms as nationally game-changing and told the ABC that deals would be struck with the states on day one of a re-elected Albanese government to set a new course for housing. We've got a housing crisis in the country that's been a generation in the making, she said. In our first term, we laid really important foundations to address the housing needs of Australians. In our second, we want to go further, much further. Really? Well, a keystone of Labor's first term was the existing Housing Future Fund, which, as Andrew Bragg highlighted, has not yet built a single new affordable home, but has been buying up existing property. The HAF underpins the Albanese government's signature housing policy, which aims to build 30,000 social and affordable homes over 5 years using the investments earned from the Future Fund. It was created with a $10 billion injection of government debt in November 2023. And It grew to $10.9 billion by December 2024, according to the Future Fund. But as the AFR reported, the government is going to be required to draw down $500 million on July the 1st. And this, combined with the global share market slump almost 8% since December, could push the fund's balance below its original $10 billion level. Labour agreed to the $500 million annual withdrawal to secure the support of the Greens after prolonged negotiations in the Senate through 2023. It's actually only 16 months old and has therefore not existed for long enough to significantly increase its capital through retained investment earnings. About 21% of the HAF's capital is in shares, while another 46% is spread across other asset classes like private equity, property, infrastructure and credit, according to the Future Fund. About one-third of the money is in cash. The HAF's investment mandate states that the Future Fund board has no obligation to ensure the fund's value stays above $10 billion, but allowing it to fall beneath $10 billion could make it harder in future years to generate the $500 million earnings required to meet the minimal drawdown. A $9 billion fund would need to grow by 5.5% to generate $500 million of earnings, whereas a $10 billion fund would only need to grow by 5%. Max Chandler-Mather, the Greens housing spokesman, said market volatility this week proved why the Greens were right to push for the $500 million guaranteed withdrawal in the first place. If the Greens had done as Labour wanted us to do, a bad year on the markets would mean zero to disperse to crucial social housing projects, Chandler-Mather said. Asked whether it would top up the HAF were the balance to fall below $10 billion, a spokesman for Finance Minister Katie Gallagher did not directly respond. The HAF is among an increasing number of so-called off-budget funds created by successive Labour and coalition governments. The funds collectively cost taxpayers about $20 billion a year and go into a range of areas like clean energy, green manufacturing, and the national broadband network. Now, all of these housing initiatives need to be seen through two lenses. The first is political, and both major parties are trying to dog whistle housing policies to attract younger voters. But from an economic perspective, initiatives which stimulate the demand for property, such as smaller deposits or tax breaks, simply pumps up demand and so prices, something which we've seen in recent years again and again from first-time buyer incentives and beyond. As the Productivity Commission reported, such incentives tend to go to those who are wealthier rather than those in most need who see prices rising against them. Tax breaks from the coalition, again, will tend to help those paying more tax. Those on more limited incomes, many in the rental sector, will miss out. So you could argue the incentives, again, do not tackle the core issue. The supply-side initiatives working with the states is something that really should have been happening already. And we know that the red tape around planning and zoning holds up development. But this will not tackle the real problem, which is the costs all in of developing an affordable home is well above household average incomes. So the supply side will fail to meet the need and won't really tackle the root cause. Nothing about real affordability here. John Kehoe actually goes to town on this in the AFR, writing, "The extraordinary dumb demand-side housing policies by Labour and the coalition will fuel even higher prices and cause first-home buyers to take on more risky debt levels." Prime Minister Albanese and opposition leader Dutton are offering sugar hits to con aspiring first home buyers into believing that both major parties will make housing more affordable. The cruel reality is both sides are pumping up demand for housing and increasing the size of loans. This will ultimately benefit sellers, property developers, and the banks. As former Reserve Bank of Australia Governor Ian Macfarlane told the Australian Financial Review on Sunday, both Labour and the coalition's policies would push up demand for housing and cause prices to rise. They are stoking up the demand side, which will mainly show up in higher prices, Macfarlane said. First-home buyers are usually already the most indebted, allowing them to buy homes through smaller deposits under Labour and tax-deductible mortgage under the coalition will leave them exposed to bigger financial risks during economic downturns, job losses and illness. The coalition says its tax subsidy will be targeted at newly built homes, but what is needed to build more homes is streamlining local and state planning, zoning and approvals, boosting density, rejecting NIMBYism, reviving lackluster construction productivity and reducing building costs, including state property taxes. Unless those problems are fixed, Labour and the coalition are just pouring more money into a supply-constrained housing market that will inevitably lead to higher prices and more debt. While these schemes may not pose an immediate financial system risk, history suggests that over time, they will inevitably expand to increase risks for banks and borrowers. The 5% home deposit scheme began small and targeted under the Morrison government in 2020, confined to first-time buyers earning up to $125,000 annually or $200,000 for couples with property price caps. The prudential regulator did not force banks to hold more risk-weighted capital, but now Labour says it will be open to all first-home buyers up to state-based house price caps. Surely, it's only a matter of time before the Liberals' tax deduction of mortgage interest for first-home buyers and for newly built homes will be expanded to a larger cohort. How long will it be before a future government allows it for both new and existing homes to be bought by first-home buyers or all buyers across the board? Dutton's subsidy for mortgage debt will erode the government's income tax base and cost the federal budget $1.25 billion over 4 years. Owner-occupied housing is already subsidised, with no capital gains tax paid on sale profits. Negatively geared investment properties are liable for CGG. If mortgage interest is going to be deductible, homes should be liable for GGT that landlords pay on investment properties. Moreover, what happens to borrowers under those Labour and coalition schemes when a buyer has to move house for work or relationship breakdown? They would no longer be a first home buyer and unable to continue to access the scheme that gave them a sugar hit in the short term. Yet again, politicians are dealing with the symptoms of high home prices, not the root causes. And also remember, one third of houses are renting and three quarters of them are in rental stress. So how does any of this help them? I say cut migration, cut red tape, and step back from further financialization of the property market by reducing tax breaks. It's not that hard, but politically, seeing home prices fall is not a winner either, which is what we really need to escape the housing affordability death trap. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.